AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we're searching for a missing child alongside Sarah Snook and Dakota Fanning in All Her Fault on Sky, heading back to school, a very exclusive school, in Wild Cherry on BBC One, and coming together as a society in Vince Gilligan's new show Pluribus on Apple TV. Plus, Jack Whitehall joins us on the show to talk about his new series Malice, which debuts on Prime. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And an important PSA is that we are recording this particular broadcast on Thursday morning, which is crucially the day of the Celebrity Traitors finale. Now, that means two things. One, it means that Boyd is already spinning out because he has a screening this evening. Will he make it home to see it? Won't he? Will he? Won't he? Will the trains be delayed? Who knows? There's a lot of drama going on here. Second thing is, they've not seen it. Kay Ribeiro, Boyd Hilton, who are, of course, here. Neither of them have seen it, so they cannot bang on about it on this podcast, which is a bonus for all of us. But one thing I will say, guys, Bake Off, eh? Caw, Jasmine, extraordinary, eh?
Oh, as if you watched it. Yeah. Did you watch it, James?
Have you
just
all the information
that?
I have.
Exactly. Anyone who watched Bake Off this year will know that it was absolutely no surprise that Jasmine
was
won
it?
Because she was sensational throughout.
Okay.
So it was kind of like, it was a shoo-in, but still enjoyable to watch.
Do you know what? I did not get into this year's Bake Off for some reason. I think it's just a matter of time.
Is it ever since you lost the Pilot TV Bake Off?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Mm. I've had a lot of people telling me that I was robbed for that.
We were both robbed in many ways, Boydie. Yeah.
But
I think so.
Yeah, no, I haven't watched it. But so you tapped into one of your junior Empire staffers, did you, to find out what happened?
No, a friend of mine told me who won, and I was like, I don't know who that is. Hmm. And then, yeah.
Jasmine was great. Yeah. Good bakes all round. So yes, James, well done for having your finger on the nub.
There you go. On the pulse, on the pie even. Do they make pies? Surely they do.
They make everything.
There you
it's
go.
All delicious.
Yeah, they make pies. Speaking of pies, or not really, what have you been watching this week, Kay? Is it a pie?
No, it's not. Okay, so I have watched all of Slow Horses, which we discussed.
We did. We had a spoiler chat for Slow Horses that went out on Pilot Plus this week, or last week as we go out now.
It was a good chat, actually.
It was
so
a good chat.
We picked over the bones of Slow Horses, and suffice to say, we all enjoyed it. So I finished that. Now, some things that aren't usually in my wheelhouse, but I've enjoyed, so I've watched for work. If you're a fan of Richard Burton, James, are you?
Sure.
What about you, Boydo?
Oh, massive, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I would recommend watching Richard Burton Wild Genius then. It's going to be on BBC Two, 9 o'clock. I conveniently haven't written down the date, but in the next couple of weeks. Boyd is going to now furnish me with that information.
Yeah.
And basically, it's an hour-long documentary which covers the
action. Wednesday, BBC Two, 9 o'clock.
Fantastic. What date, Boyd? Wednesday?
The 12th of November, 2025.
Wonderful. Mm. And it covers his, you know, obviously extraordinary talent and his life, everything, including his addiction to alcohol, which is obviously well documented, but I didn't realise how bad it got and how, you know, it made him forget his lines. He had to have, like, lines written on massive bits of board towards the end.
To be fair, Marlon Brando did something much the same. So.
Oh, really? Mm. Okay.
They're also showing, it's a Richard Burton Fest on BBC, because they're also showing that Mr. Burton film as well.
It's a centenary, is it, of his birth?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Not his birth, can't be. That doesn't make sense, does it?
It's
not been 100 years since he died, I can tell you that.
Oh, maybe
he died in the 80s,
yet.
I think.
Yes, okay, well, I don't know, it doesn't quite
ring
true.
It must be really? Since he was born, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to look it up. Born, wait for it.
Live Googling.
Oh, no, yeah, born 10th November 1925.
Oh.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, with the facts. Yeah, doubted herself, but correct. Yeah. Okay, fine. Anyway, so I would recommend that. It's really good. Now, the next two things I'm going
to... That weirdly touches on one of my recommendations that I'm about to make.
Oh,
so shall I make it now?
Go on,
shall I interrupt
now?
I watched this documentary, or it's just mainly an interview with Sir Anthony Hopkins,
who has a biography out.
And is also very Welsh, and also very much an actor, like Richard Burton, and very much had a drinking problem what she talks about, a couple of like decades ago. I think it's 25 years ago, roughly. And then he's been dry, or whatever you call it.
Sober.
Sober, that's it, for 25 years. But it's a really, I love him. I absolutely love Anthony Hopkins. He talked about growing old gracefully. He's so kind of, seems like such a good guy now. And he was absolutely critical of it. He said he was a nightmare to work with back in the day when he was drinking. And basically, the interviewer says to him, you know, what is it with all these actors like Richard Burton and Peter O'Toole? There was a whole generation.
Richard Harris.
They were all like Oliver Reed.
Oliver Reed, yes. And I nearly said Oliver Platt.
Pretty much all of them were, by the way, were in A Man for All Seasons, the legendary film. And he's like, what was it about you all that you all drank so much? He said, well, it's just the way it was. You know, like, you know, it was like to be like a macho guy.
Yeah,
kind of thing. It was very much cultural. So, and he talked about what absolute nightmare he was to work with. He would make a living hell for directors working with him. And he kind of apologized to all these people who he's, you know, had terrible behavior with. But it was a really good interview. And
what channel?
BBC Two as well. It's on iPlayer.
BBC's
now.
Really pulling out the bag.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's really funny, but we can carry on in a second.
Yeah.
He's really funny about the Hannibal Lecter stuff and science. He does the Hannibal Lecter voice and dialogue to the interviewer. Katie Razzell is the interviewer. You know, Katie, she's like their arts correspondent or whatever. And it's really funny. So, yes, carry on. That's the two documentaries about Welsh acting legends.
We're like Welsh correspondents now. Basically. Okay, and the last few things I want to touch upon briefly are films. So I'm going to say, I know, because you do it all the time. Yes, I know.
There's no judgment here.
Well, no, the only reason why I'm bringing this one up, I mentioned it on Pilot Plus, but I finally watched The Ballad of Wallace Island.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did. It's on Apple TV, and I just loved it. I thought it was such a gorgeous film. Funny. Tim Key. Sensational in it. It's sad, uplifting, joyful, everything. It was everything I hoped for, and would have been worth the visit on the train if I had managed to reach my destination. And the other thing also, while I'm at it, and I'm not being sponsored by Apple, is also a film, but I just want to flag it because I think it's really good, and it's called Come See Me in the Good Light. And it's about poet laureate Andrea Gibson, who received a terminal cancer diagnosis, and it's their final months. And it covers their extraordinary talent and their great love affair with their wife, Meg, also a poet. And honestly, I just was so moved by it. It's devastating, heartbreaking, but also very uplifting and worth everyone's time. So, yeah. And that's called Come See Me in the Good Light, and it's on Apple TV.
My aforementioned Anthony Hopkins show, I didn't say the title, it's called Anthony Hopkins, A Career in Character. It's on iPlayer, and it's with Katie Razzell, who's very good. I've been watching more of I Love LA, which is the show that we didn't review because you two didn't get the screeners in time.
I want to watch it.
I really like it now. I'm properly like a huge fan of it now. I think it's kind of like Girls, but funnier. And it's setting out to be funny, but it does it treads the line. I'm calling it the James line,
the Dyer line. Okay,
between silly comedy and realistic comedy, character based that emerges from the organically, if you like, and it treads it brilliantly. I think you might actually like it if you can get over the excruciating element of it. But I think because it's so funny, it gets away with its most excruciating moments because they're just awful, awful people. But it's really funny at the same time. I think it's worth giving it a go. But what I would say is, as it goes on, you're introduced to the main character who's annoying. Then you're introduced to her ex-best friend / frenemy who's more annoying. Then you're introduced to this other woman who arrives in their scene and she's even more annoying than the previous two annoying ones.
Wait a minute, three annoying people?
Funny.
Is it about this podcast?
It's so funny. Yeah, very good. Who's the annoying most?
I think we know who the most annoying is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Hey!
Now looking at that person.
We didn't even...
I feel attacked.
I didn't look at anyone, James.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's just really... It's really well done, and it's kind of put, and it's got lots of self-aware elements to it. So, you know, a Nepo baby daughter of Forrest Whitaker plays a Nepo baby daughter of a famous actor who's been given the job of being CEO of like one of his side companies, and she goes and invades their like boardroom and just has no idea what the fuck's going on, and they're all obviously massively resentful because she's just the daughter of the guy who owns the company. There's so many moments like that, and it's really well observed.
How many eps?
I think it's 10 in all.
Oh, good.
And I've watched like half of them now. Yeah.
And what's...
Oh, no, 8. Sorry,
what
8.
What canal?
It's on Sky Comedy.
Right.
Sky and Now, if you have the Now streaming service as well. Rachel Sennott is the created it. She stars in it. And Odessa Azion is the annoying one. And True Whitaker is the Nepo Baby one. It's really funny. Oh, and the gay guy, Jordan Firstman, is also incredibly hilarious as well. So, yeah, I just all round, it's great.
Josh, you've convinced me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm definitely
going to
watch it.
Must watch. Oh, you really like it, I think. I also had to watch Malice, which is heavily embargoed. This is the Prime Video show showing to Jack about, Jack Whitehall about, which you'll hear shortly. Can't say anything about it, but let's just say what I can reveal is that you see David Duchovny's backside within the first few seconds.
Wow.
What?
Anyone who's seen Californication will have seen a lot more than that.
That's
but
true.
Is true or false, this is an interpretative remake of the episode of Friends in which Freddie Prinze Jr. plays the Manny who looks after... Ross and Rachel's baby.
You could regard it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
it's basically like the Manny from Hell. It's like, you know, the hand that rocks the cradle was the nanny from Hell.
Yeah, the this hairy is... hand that rocks the cradle.
Exactly. I don't think Jack's hands are that hairy, frankly. I was going about to say something. I was about to issue a value judgment, and I retract. I'm not.
Yeah, good. Well,
absolutely dodged a bullet there. I watched The Beast in Me, which was heavily embargoed, which hopefully we'll get to. This is another Netflix show that, you know, star-studded. Claire Danes. Remember how Claire Danes had to do a lot of crying throughout Homeland? She became famous for it.
Yeah.
Constantly in tears. I mean, you haven't seen nothing there because she's almost constantly in tears in the show as well.
God, but give her a break.
Again, can't review it because it's...
Have you seen Death by Lightning?
No, I was going to mention Death by Lightning. I haven't. And that's like...
That drops
really
today as we record.
Yeah, I know. And it's almost like another thing that Netflix hasn't really...
Yeah.
Barely even heard of it. But it's like the Deep Weiss and thing. It's like Game of Thrones creators.
Michael Shannon's in it.
Michael McFadden. What's his name?
Matthew McFadden.
Thank you. He's in it. They had a big premiere in... But yeah, it's weird. Yeah. But again, that's heavily embargoed and we couldn't
so
even...
bored of it. So bored of... No, not of you talking. Sorry. Wow.
So bored of you, Boyd. Good God, are you still going on?
I'm so bored of like heavily embargoed, all this bollocks. It's just like,
I mean,
stop.
To be fair, that one is only embargoed until today because it's literally out today. So we could have done it this week for Monday's podcast.
I know, but you know what I'm saying. It's like everything's embargoed these days. It's like annoying.
Yeah. And finally, you know, Riot Women. You watched all of Riot Women, right?
No, I'm at 3 or 4 eps in.
Oh, you know, 4 is... Well,
actually, no, I haven't seen 4.
Okay,
I'm
4
is... third. Yeah, because so I've heard 4 is devastating.
Episode 4 was on last weekend. And the weekend before last, if you're listening to this on Monday, and that's the devastating one. It is horrific.
Really?
Absolutely horrific. And I was kind of prepared for it because everyone's going, oh, you know, there's this big thing that happens in episode 4. Get ready. It's distressing. It's fucking distressing, is all I'd say.
Nope. And
yeah. It's a definite no for you.
I'm going to have to watch it.
But really well done. The thing that really struck me about it is how well directed it was, because Sally Wainwright directed this series, right? As well as, you know, Roach. And she directed episodes of Happy Valley before and stuff. But it just the way it works, the kind of cross-cutting between one thing and another, it's really powerful. Yeah, it's quite incredible, yeah. So it's taken a turn, but it's a great
I'm dreading
show.
It, but I want to watch it. But I have heard a lot, you know.
You'll cope. You'll
okay,
fine. It's him that won't be
there. Yeah, I won't cope.
James is out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it from me. Okay,
I have kept my viewing to The Smug and The Limited. We'll begin with The Smug. I have watched the first 3 episodes of the new series of Hijack.
Which you only know about because I told you.
Which you only know about because Boyd mentioned
this on yourself.
That it was on the screening site yesterday, and I immediately went back and hoovered up 3 episodes.
Oh, you see, I haven't had time to watch any of it.
Now, there is a caveat that I'm going to have to drop.
Oh.
There are, you remember the first season, there were 7 episodes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is an 8 episode season. But only the first 6 are on the screening site. And it doesn't start until the middle of January, which means that what's going to happen is I'm going to watch 6 episodes and then have to wait several months to find out.
Do you know what? I'm so happy about this.
Same for me as well.
So I am hoist by my own Hijack-shaped petard.
And you obviously can't say what you think about it, but you've watched it.
But let's just say it takes a turn. That's all I'm going to say. I was like, bloody hell. So, yeah.
My close personal friend, Idris.
Yeah, your close personal friend.
Yeah. Okay. I'm excited to see that.
For another season. So, yes, the gourmet burger returns.
My close personal friend, Jim Field Smith, who directed it.
All right, let's not have a conversation.
Close personal friend off.
Actually, he's a close personal friend. Well, he's a friend.
Boy, yeah, you've downgraded him instantly.
You've embarrassed yourself there.
Yeah.
We'll see what Jim says.
Jimbo.
Oh, Jimbo Fieldsmith. Right, so I watched that. I also watched the rest of Down Cemetery Road. So I've now completed Down Cemetery Road. On balance, I will say two things. One, I enjoyed it enormously and regret absolutely nothing about watching it through to the end. I think I probably stand by my criticisms of it. I still think it's probably a three. It's a pretty high three, but it's still a three star, I think. And I do, again, and no shade to be thrown at Adil Akhtar, who I do think is great. I do think I struggle with his character in this because he just doesn't fit the show.
I disagree.
Do you know what? Do you know who agrees with you about that and in general about your review? It was like last week, obviously I had to listen to you reviewing it in front of me.
Yes,
live,
you did.
And I disagree with you about the tonal shifts and all of that. But then I went home and listened to the Kermode and Mayo take podcast, and Mark Kermode is entirely in agreement with you.
Really?
Yeah, even singling out Adil Akhtar's role, for being like he's in a different show. I think he actually even used the same phrase. It was, oh my God.
Do you think he listens to this podcast? And he cribbed my opinion.
Oh my God, that is a bold
take. I was thinking, oh my God, this is weird. But yeah, he was really, he similarly had issues with the tone, the tonal shifts, and particularly the Adil Akhtar's character.
Yeah.
And I get it. I guess it just doesn't bother me. Tonal shifts just don't bother me.
I don't think the Adil Akhtar situation improves throughout the show. I think it kind of compounds itself. Mm. And it is a shame because I think, to be fair, he's not the only character who is, shall we say, rendered in very broad strokes. I've just realised that the camera studio lights aren't on, so I'm just going to brighten up the room.
God.
So if you're watching on YouTube and it suddenly got brighter, I've just remembered to turn the lights on, so you're welcome. a few of them are quite broadly rendered, I thought. Mm. But I think the central characters are great. Like, you know, Ruth Wilson's character and Emma Thompson's character and Zoe Bohm. And she's brilliantly acerbic. And again, that continues as well. And it is, you know, it's a fun thing, but it feels like it's sort of like sub slow horses. Mm. It is sub slow horses.
Yeah, I think we got to stop comparing them though.
I mean, it is unfair in many ways because
Slow
Horses are fabulous. Mm. But like I say, really enjoyed it. Glad I pressed on to the end. Had a really good time with it. The thing I had more fun, though, with this week, I watched end-to-end the entire series of Task, which I had obviously reviewed on this podcast, and I hadn't watched past the first episode because I just had a lot on. And it's fabulous. Mm. So that's really good. But
he actually did a shoulder shimmer there.
Shimmy.
Watching, I can confirm. That's like
shoulder shimmy.
God, don't do it again.
Oh my God. It was real sort of the
art. Yeah. God, the lights are up.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah.
Suddenly,
yeah.
Is it a coincidence that the lights went up and he started shimmering?
Can we be plunged back in darkness? Is that possible?
Quick, everyone turn the lights off so I can shimmy in peace.
Yeah.
No, it's so good. And it doesn't go where you think it's going to go. And it kind of, to a certain aspects of it, peak quite early and then other stuff happens. It's a really good show.
Yeah,
like, it definitely has that kind of East Town flair to it. And I thought it was great. Really, really enjoyed it. So we'll have to sit down and have a post-mortem spoiler chat.
When I've got time.
When Boydie has time, we'll discuss
it. He's got to dedicate himself to the traitors tonight.
Yeah. Well, you can add it to your task list.
Oh, no, I've watched the show. It's just finding time to record it.
Really. Oh, boy, pull your finger out then.
Yeah.
If you've watched it.
It's still like a chunk out of my hectic
busy, busy
schedule.
Busy
what else
day.
Are you doing? Come on.
I mean, but yeah, good to know that you liked it. Anyway, you're trying to get Brad Inglesby, right? The writer.
Yeah.
So I'm just leaving it to all that.
I can't tell you. Well, that may or may not happen, so we'll see. If not, then the two of us would
still
well, if Brad won't bother doing it, then maybe Boyd won't either.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's fair.
Exactly.
Yeah. so that's all I've been watching pretty much this week. But I think that's a goodly amount of things.
That was a good amount of things, yeah.
Mm, very good.
Okay.
Quality.
Should we have a listener question?
Yes, let's. Okay, so we have a message from Mary who says, being a pilot fan since Ep 1, love it, both regular and plus. From this past Monday's episode, you mentioned Only Murders in the Building in London, which is very exciting. My vote is for the show to happen at the St. Pancras Renaissance Hotel on Euston Road.
Oh, yeah, that's a good shout.
She said it's the coolest building a hotel is in London, in my humble opinion. From the glorious staircase made famous by the Spice Girls to its many appearances in TV and film, it's fabulous. And then she continues and says, so to that end, not including White Lotus, please, what are the best TV shows that have primarily taken place in a hotel, inn, or B&B? I'm getting straight in it, and I'm saying 40 Towers.
Yes, of course.
Wow. I mean, that's the answer, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
no, that's my answer. What's your
that's
answer,
the only
guys?
Answer. There are no other answers.
Well, this crosses over with news because the top most exciting news story of the week is about the night manager. And the night manager started out as a lot of hotel-based.
Good answer.
Yeah.
That is a good answer.
Yeah, there you go. I'll get to the news on that later.
Yeah.
Exciting foreshadowing there,
yeah.
Listeners.
What else? Is there anything else?
Hotel-based fun.
White Lotus is such an obvious.
Yeah, we can't go White Lotus. Schitt's Creek is a motel, isn't it? So we can get away with that, maybe.
Cool. That's a really good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you could probably get away with that.
Yeah. Definitely.
American Horror Story has a literal series called Hotel.
Oh my God, yeah. Which is one of my favourite. That was the Lady Gaga season, actually.
Yes, it was.
And while she was terrible in it, and she was, it was a really fun season. Yeah, I like that season. Ryan Murphy is high.
Yes. Okay, fine. So there we go. That's a very brief listener question. Well, I'm glad we were able to answer it so succinctly. Good.
Enter, please.
There we go. Darren will be very pleased because it keeps the editing down. If you want your question incredibly quickly answered on this podcast, do send them into pilottv@empiremagazine.com and we will do our absolute best to put in the bare minimum effort. Time now for this week's guest, and it is Jack Whitehall, who you will know from his stand-up, obviously, from Fresh Meat, from Bad Education, The After Party, or indeed Clifford the Big Red Dog. He's on our screens today, not... you may be surprised to hear, for a comedic role, but instead for James Woods' new series, Malice on Prime. And this is a psychological thriller in which Whitehall's male nanny, or Manny, starts working for a rich family, only to be revealed as having malevolent intent. So we sent someone with equally malevolent intent to speak to him. And this is what happened when he met Boyd the Butcher.
Oh, dear. Jack Whitehall, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. As ever. How do you enjoy a day of press? Is it, you know, can you?
It always improves the moment you walk into the room.
Yeah.
Of course. I'll leave it at that.
Meanwhile, I will.
Yeah, you can read into that what you will.
I will read into that what I will. Okay. There's a scene in episode one of Malice.
Yes.
Where you're on a yacht.
Yes.
With these other kind of rich people, yes. And you're topless,
yes.
And two women are ogling you, basically. Yes. And I thought, what a long way we've come with Jack Whitehall. How was it when you read that in the script and you thought, oh yeah, let's do this. Let's go topless. Let's show off. Let's become a sex object, effectively.
To be ogled.
To be ogled.
I mean, there's been a few attempts at reaching this point, to be fair. I think in the After Party, when I got cast in that, there was a reference in the script to me having washboard abs. And then I signed on to do the part and they reissued a script where they'd taken out the washboard abs element because they'd just assumed that it would be impossible for me to achieve that kind of physicality. But yes, on this occasion, I was determined that I would try to get into shape and starve myself for a couple of months before that scene. And that, you know... it was as good as it got. I still watch the scene back and I'm like, it could be better. I mean, they could have just hired Glenn Powell for like the day and then maybe shot him from the neck down and then cut to my face when they look back.
Yeah.
But,
next time. So what kind of regime did you put yourself through? It was literally like not eating but working out.
And yeah, it was a lot of working out and training and trying to just like be in as good a shape as possible because I knew I had that. I mean, that was the hardest thing about this part is that it was not only that, it was, an element of like trying to get into, good shape physically, but also I was playing a part that was meant to be very competent at a lot of things. And he was able to cook and flare cocktails and Greek dance and, knew about Greek tragedies and could speak multiple languages and all of these things. And so you had to do so much preparation for it. And I'm used to historically playing fools and idiots and people that are really incompetent. And it's so much easier to play someone that just is, dropping things all the time and falling over and saying the wrong thing. To play a part that's competent is a much heavier lift, it turns out.
Oh, I bet. What was the hardest thing that you had to learn to do?
The Greek dance, I think, was...
The Greek dance, which is in episode two.
Yes.
It's an astonishing moment.
Oh, yeah. It was a very hard dance to learn because it's also, you're learning you know, to dance and do it in a sort of technical way, but then it's this very specific Greek dance, which is like all off the beat and is meant to be like semi-improvised as well. So you have to learn it, but then slightly unlearn it. And then we did all of this time with the dance instructor, Patsy, who was fantastic and brought me up to speed. And we did it all in a studio in London. Then we went out to Greece and we were filming in a Greek village. And all of the extras in this Greek wedding sequence were just locals from the town who we invited down to be part of this this wedding sequence, but they saw me rehearsing in the town square, and then they would all come over and start chipping in and giving their like tips and telling me how I could do it better. And so suddenly I had like 30 instructors on the day who were all like, yeah, pulling apart the choreography and giving their two pence.
How many takes did you have to do of that? Because it's quite an elaborate moment in the
It was quite a lot. It was quite a lot of takes, and it was sort of the last thing we filmed. You know, at 1 o'clock in the morning, it was absolutely exhausting, and my knees were just shredded at the end of it as well. So it was, yeah, that was definitely the most like physically demanding of the things that we did. Yeah. But yeah,
Overall, the whole idea of the show. I saw James Wood, who's the creator of the show you worked with before, of course, and he described it as a bit of a throwback to those Hand That Rocks the Cradle type thrillers, and it does feel like that way. When you, how did the whole idea come about? How did they approach you and said, do you want to become, play a psychotic Manny? And you thought, I have to do that.
Yeah, it was slightly that. I think, yeah, Tim or James called me up and said, we think you make a great psychopath, which I didn't really know how to take, but was, yeah, very excited about the opportunity to sort of do something that was completely out of my lane and find, you know, a part that would really push me and that would be really challenging. But yeah, it is sort of one of those classic like Cuckoo in the Nest thrillers, and you know, has elements of, you know, Talented Mr. Ripley and, you know, those types of movies. But yeah, it was great. It was just so much fun to play a character that was really villainous and do some of the darker stuff as well.
Did you study any previous like famous, you know, I don't know, Hannibal Lecter or Anthony Perkins or something?
Yeah, well, Anthony Perkins in Psyche was one of the references that James mentioned. And so I revisited that and watched, you know, these characters that sort of present as something very different. And actually, you know, Matt Damon in Talented Mr. Ripley is a good example of that as well, where they sort of appear very sort of charming and lovely kind of people that you let your guard down with. And I think with Adam, there was definitely an element of that, of wanting to try and present as something very different, but then like finding the moments to like just hint at that malice and the inner rage that he had and trying to underpin everything. So you were always feeling a little bit unnerved and tense in his presence.
Did your friends and family, when you floated the idea of you playing a psychopath, did they go, oh, yeah, that makes sense?
Yeah, people were very readily up for the idea and thought that it made sense, which again was quite disconcerting. I thought they would be like, you know, appalled by such a notion. But Roxy was like, yeah, you'll be great. And I was like, okay, I don't know really how to take that.
Your mum, Hillary, what's her verdict?
Hillary, yeah, I think she thought that it was a good fit as well. No one challenged it whatsoever. So yeah, maybe there's something about, you know, the brain of a comedian and a psychopath that aren't that far apart.
Maybe.
You've got to be a bit weird.
There's some key moments. The thrashing of the octopus is an extraordinary moment where you really get into that. And I think that kind of, you know, has implications for what else is to come. But that's like, how did you enjoy thrashing octopi?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty, strange scene to film, especially when I've watched my octopus teacher. But, you know, it had to have enough of those moments where, yeah, it does kind of throw you and you just suddenly don't know what you're meant to be thinking or feeling about this character. And I think, you know, that was the really like challenging thing about that, like specifically in that pilot episode that James had to navigate, was just, you know, setting out the stall of what it is and making sure that it's all underpinned with enough dramatic tension and it doesn't feel like you're watching something that's going to be just like fun and cozy and I enjoyed working out what those moments were going to be and where we could like hint at where it goes as a show.
And there's a scene, I don't want to give anything away, but there's a scene, episode 2, I think you know what I mean, where you go to this place and It's a lot of shocking behaviour going
on. Shocking.
Let's just, now your facial expression, there's a moment in that, right towards the end, where this guy walks in and you kind of like look him up and you kind of check him out.
Check him out.
Which is one of the funniest things. And yet, you know, darkest things I've ever seen. It's like, it's a brilliant little moment. What was that scene like to film without?
So strange. Because it was like, you know, at the best of times, doing any sort of sex scenes is always the least sexy thing ever, because you're in a very weird environment on a film set, surrounded by crew. It's normally at a strange, you know, hour of the day. But that one was just like nothing I'd ever done before. We were in a strip club in Watford at 8 o'clock in the morning, pretending it was this sort of, you know, sex club. And yeah, there was a whole sequence that I think has actually ended up on the editing room floor, where I ended up in a private room with that gentleman and we were getting even more physically intimate. And I walked in, we literally just introduced to him this gentleman called Jeff, and he had a cushion sort of strapped round his midriff. And the most uncomfortable bit was not actually filming the scenes of intimacy. It was the little breaks in between the takes where then you'd have to have small talk. And we'd done a couple of takes, and clearly, you know, he felt like, you know, we'd both warmed up and built somewhat of a chemistry. And he went, "Oh, Jack, I hope you don't mind, but would I be able to get a selfie at some point?" And I was like, "Yeah, maybe we could wait till after we finish the scene. This doesn't feel like the moment to do the selfie." And he went, "It's just that my son's a big fan of yours." And I was like, "He won't be once he sees this. I can assure you of that."
First of all, I can't believe that scene is going to end up on the cutting room floor.
I know, he wasn't even in it. So actually, the son maybe will still be a fan of mine, because he wouldn't be if he'd seen that.
No, absolutely. Maybe deleted scenes.
Yeah.
No, don't really do those anymore.
He was literally holding the back of my head when he asked for the selfie. Wow. Amazing timing.
Yeah. I was going to say, what was the hardest film to scene, but to film? But it may be that one.
That was pretty challenging. There were some other scenes sort of, you know, later in the shoot where I do some really pretty evil things, and filming those and sort of inhibiting a character that's capable of doing such terrible things is quite exhausting and like emotionally draining. And so there was definitely a few days where like there was a degree of having to decompress in the car on the way home, because I knew that I was walking back into the house and having to do, you know, bath and bedtime with my daughter and be a present partner and all of those, you know, just normal things that you do in your life. Yeah, that element of it was definitely very different. It was a lot easier to decompress from Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Good to know. Yeah, and I follow you on Instagram, and I see during the filming, you looked like you're having a great time, all of you. Like, you know, when you weren't filming in the Watford bit, but yes, when you're actually on location in Greece and all of that, it looks like. Did you manage to have a good time? You know, I'm not saying you had a holiday.
No, it's great.
Yeah,
it was wonderful, and it was a, you know, an amazing island, and we were looked after so well when we were in Greece. And filming for, you know, a couple of months in Paros was an absolute joy. Had never had as many set visits in my life. It's like the agents, you normally have to drag them kicking and screaming to set to buy you lunch, but on this they were all there. There were agents that I didn't even know I had would suddenly rock up and they'd be there.
Your secret entourage.
For the jolly. Yeah, exactly.
Did the parents come?
Of course. Yeah. They actually came to that day in Watford. Yeah. I warned them not to, but Michael really wanted this. No. He walked in, he's like, "Oh, it's nice to be back." I was like, "What?" No, they did not come to that day, but they did visit set, and Roxy and Elsie came as well. But yeah, it was a great shoot, and the fellow cast were amazing. You know, Carice and David was great, and you know, built a really natural kind of chemistry with him, which then we had to sort of strip away completely because we were playing adversaries, and he's a hard man to hate in real life, but I had to hold this, like, you know, rage for him in every scene that we had, and he's just effortlessly charming. So it's quite.
He's one of my heroes because I used to love The X-Files. So I was very excited to see him opposite you. And the scenes between the two of you are really interesting because you're kind of like, there's like psychological warfare going on. Yeah. And of course, he's also clearly going for a laugh because in his first scene, he gets his bum out.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
something for the mums.
Some of the
buns for the mums.
Dads as well. Yeah.
And the dads. Yeah. I think my bit's for the dads.
Okay, that's true.
But yeah, no, he's great and really game. And it was great seeing him, you know, do this and play this type of part. And I think it's so much better for his presence in it, because as well he has this natural, like, undeniable charisma and charm and aura about him that really helps with making that Jamie character feel multidimensional and someone that, you know, can be a bit boorish but is also, you know, really appealing as well. So I think it helps with this constant balancing act of whose side you're on.
Does this represent? I mean, you're great in it, by the way. I thought you did such a good job in this character. I totally went with it. Is this the future? Would you like to do more kind of challenging acting roles, or are you going to carry on doing the stand up? And you can't abandon your comedy career.
I definitely won't abandon the comedy career. And you know, I love doing comedy, and I love getting to do shows where I could turn up to set and play and improvise and fool around, and they're great. But it's really nice to be able to do something like this and have these challenges. And have these jobs where, you know, you turn up to set every day and you're kind of terrified in a good way, because, you know, you're really pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and being challenged by the material. So hopefully there'll be more of this. I mean, you know, maybe I'll now just get typecast as psychopaths and, you know, long may it continue. But
great future ahead.
Yeah,
great future.
Exactly. We'll see how it goes down. I may be here in a couple of years' time promoting the reboot of Celebrity Juice and telling you it was all a disaster.
That'll be fun as well.
That'll be fun, yeah.
Great to see you. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks.
Cheers, man.
That was Jack Whitehall. Time now for this week's news. Now, Boydie.
Yes.
I hear you may have some news for us.
I think so, because, yeah, the Night Manager, they've revealed, as they call them, the first look images. And they've also revealed a lot about the story and the cast, which I think is new news. Remember, the original Night Manager was a massive phenomenon, a huge success, adapted from the John le Carré book. And it's going to be back with kind of using those characters that were in the first series. But obviously, John le Carré is now no longer with us and didn't write an actual sequel to the original book. So they've kind of created a new story featuring those characters. And the pictures look really interesting. There's one picture of Tom Hiddleston, obviously he's back in the role of British intelligence operative Jonathan Pine, and there's a one shot of him canoodling with another couple in a kind of, they're kind of like up close and personal dirty dancing like type situation.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, what's going on there, Mr. Hiddleston? You may ask. Olivia Colman is back. Do you remember Olivia Colman was in it? I think that's a pretty good coup. Since Colman can do anything these days, she's in a kind of supporting role in this series. It's good to see her back. And the storyline is Jonathan Pine, Tom Hiddleston, thought he'd buried his past, now living as Alex Goodwin, a low-level MI6 officer running a quiet surveillance unit in London. His life is comfortably uneventful. Then one night, a chance sighting of an old mercenary prompts a call to action and leads Pine to a violent encounter with a new player, Colombian businessman Teddy Dos Santos, played by Diego Calva. And, but it looks great from the pictures. They've done a good job, because I am now fully excited about the whole thing. What they don't say is when it is arriving.
No.
I think it's not going to be till next year.
It won't be till next year, yeah.
I reckon Jan.
Do you?
Yeah.
Have you got inside information?
Absolutely not. I just plucked a month from the calendar. But no,
it feels like, what it does feel like, I agree with you, it does feel January. If it actually feels like the big January the 1st, you know, they usually have a huge big, like Happy Valley, the final series started on New Year's Day on BBC One. The second series of The Tourist, similarly. So they usually have a big drama offering on New Year's Day. I'd hope this will be that, but I'm not sure if it is. That hasn't been confirmed to me, certainly, or anyone I know.
Well, you would be the person who would know, boys.
You'd think, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll get a call, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I hope it's them, but it might not be.
Something I was excited about was a press release I just got this morning, actually, and it was about the fact that ITV has commissioned The Party.
Yes, I saw
this. Which is going to star Luke Evans. It's written by Sarah Soleimani, and it's based on Elizabeth Day's book, her novel. It's going to be produced by World Productions, so it sounds really exciting.
The Line of Duty fame.
Yes, of course. Luke Evans will play Martin Gilmore, who's a journalist shaped by his lifelong friendship with the wealthy and charismatic politician Ben Fitzmaurice, played by Tom Cullen. Tom Cullen again.
Yeah.
Very popular.
He's everywhere.
Apparently, he was raised alone by his working class mum, Sylvia, played by Joanna Scanlon. And he wins a scholarship to an elite boarding school where he first meets Ben. They forge an unbreakable bond as Ben and the Fitzmaurices give Martin the sense of belonging he has always craved. And in turn, Martin remains unflinchingly loyal to Ben through even the greatest crises.
Have you read that book?
No.
Huh?
I'm currently, weirdly, look,
you know,
how weird
you
is
let
this?
Me down because I was expecting you would have done.
No, but I'm reading her, I'm currently reading her first, I think it's her first book. Here, look, How to Fail.
Yes, you
how
are.
How weird is that?
That is quite
actually?
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is weird. But that's not that's like a
non-fiction.
Self-help book, isn't it? Yeah,
this is, no, it's non-fiction.
But yes. Yeah, the this is her from a novel, obviously.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Of course.
As stated prior. So I'm really excited about that.
Sarah Soleimani is a legend and mm-hmm. a friend of the podcast, I'm saying.
A close personal friend of boys.
They all are.
Kurt Sutter is not a close personal friend of mine, but I do very much like his work. And I was very excited to see the trailer for his new show dropped this week, which is The Abandons on Netflix. It's a Western with Lena Headey and Gillian Anderson. And Lena Headey seems to be like a homesteader, a sort of group of, lead some sort of settlers. And Gillian Anderson is like a, I don't know, like a wicked rancher who's trying to drive her off her land and take her land from her. It's all very sinister. But Kurt Sutter is a big one for ultra-violence and sadistic shit. Like, he's the man behind, he worked on The Shield, he did Sons of Anarchy, he worked briefly on Mayans MC, but yes, he does.
How come
have a,
you like him then?
Do you know
hate
what?
That stuff.
It's a good point, and I must admit, like Sons of Anarchy, he used to start pretty much every season with an incredibly graphic and hugely upsetting bit of violence. And when I did my rewatch of Sons of Anarchy, I struggled with each and every one of those, which is kind of the beginning of each season. There was always a thing, and it was always horrible. And I never liked that. I really liked the show, but I could have done without that. He puts his characters through a lot. He plays he actually stars in The Shield as well as a serial killer. An Albanian, not really a serial killer, he's an Albanian sort of like criminal who runs an organized crime organization, and he likes cutting off people's feet.
Not as killery as
Oh, with that. Someone should have told him that.
Let's just make it clear.
It's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. It's not full on serial killing.
Yeah.
He just lops off bits.
I mean, it's like taking Feet Finder really literally.
Oh my God. Like, serial dismemberment is okay.
Yeah.
The Abandons then, which lands on Netflix on the 4th of December. So excited about that new Kurt Sutter show. But that wasn't the only trailer that dropped this week. We also had Checks Notes, a trailer for Wonder Man, which, Kay, you will have limited interest in, but this is the new sort of MCU superhero TV show starring Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. It's quite meta. It's a superhero who wants to get a role playing a superhero in a TV show. But it's a TV show about a superhero who wants to play a superhero in a TV show.
Sounds quite interesting.
Yeah. The fact that he is a superhero, has powers, I guess, is like the big secret like keeps from people.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen was brilliant in
Watchmen.
Mm. Naked, wasn't he?
He was quite very naked in Watchmen. Yes.
Blue and naked.
Yes.
Yes.
So I don't know what to make of Wonder Man. It looks interesting.
I haven't really heard of this.
No, it's not been particularly well publicised, but it's an interesting project.
But it's a Marvel show.
It's an MCU show, beyond Disney Plus.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, Wonder Man drops on Disney Plus on January the 27th.
Oh.
Yeah.
Excellent. Did you see the glorious news after all the acclaim that we, particularly you two, have given not to Nobody Wants This Season 2, that Nobody Wants This has been renewed for Season 3?
It has been renewed for third season.
It's a no-brainer.
It is, but equally, part of me is just like, meh.
Yeah.
I'm a bit...
I agree.
Because it's funny, like I enjoyed the second season and I did watch it all and I was like, yeah, it's not as good as the first one. The more I've thought about it, the less I've liked it. And it's like, I'm thinking back on it, it's like there was almost nothing memorable about it. Like, it was perfectly pleasant watch, but there was nothing that stuck in my mind about it.
See, I would be tuning in to Season 3 solely for Sasha and the sister to see what's happening with their relationships.
Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah, I know. But it's true.
It is true.
Like, they had the most interesting...
I enjoy it. I agree with you, but I still enjoyed it.
Did you watch all of Season 2?
No.
Aha! J'accuse! Mon petit frange!
God. But I will. No, I want to carry on watching it. I do enjoy it, yeah.
Okay, well, come back to us when you have.
don't enjoy it enough to finish watching it, though, do you?
Well, you know.
He's a busy man.
He's a busy boy.
A busy man, yeah. Yeah.
Look, obviously, it's going to be a tonal segue here because, you know, hilarity. But I was genuinely upset to hear this week that Checky Cario has died.
Yes, that is an absolute...
Which was really sad.
Yeah,
Checky Cario, 72.
Yeah.
I interviewed him just last year for Boat Story.
Mm.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, I hosted a couple of Q&As with him. Not, it's all about us, obviously.
No, of course it's not. It's about Checky Cario.
He was absolutely brilliant.
Baptiste.
Yeah. Baptiste. He was so good. They made that spin-off.
That's right. Baptiste.
Yes, Baptiste.
Yes. He was obviously a character appeared in The Missing, didn't he? And then they spun off Baptiste.
Yes. Yeah, he was fantastic. And he was a really, really good guy.
Yeah,
well.
Great French like actor. He was in the original Bad Boys.
Wow.
If you can believe that. That was a long time ago. But yeah, great. Great actor. Mm. Really lovely man as well. Yeah, really interesting interview.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, died at the age of 72. Very sad.
Very sad.
Do you have any happier news?
Okay, I've got some news to end on, which is that Paramount Plus has announced that they are going to be releasing The Revenge Club on the 12th of December. So this is a 6-part series starring Martin Compton, Amy Fionn Edwards, and Mira Sayal. And the synopsis reads, it follows 6 lonely, hapless strangers brought together by a divorce support group, each reeling from betrayal and heartbreak. With little in common beyond their emotional baggage, they form an unlikely bond and come up with a wildly misguided idea to take revenge on the people who broke their hearts. Sounds fantastic. Look, James's interest peaked. what starts as a cathartic outlet quickly spirals in something far more chaotic as their retribution escalates from petty pranks, forged exam papers, tarot cons, and rat invasions to deadly accidents. Dun, dun, dun. Sounds good.
Well, it's good to have Martin Compton back.
Listen,
it is good to have Martin Compton back.
And yes. He's going
to
be back also in Red Eye Series 2,
yes.
By the way.
Redder Eye. Or Red Eyes.
Even more Red Eye.
Which
yeah.
I think that is coming very soon, isn't it? That might be a New Year's treat as well from ITV.
Perhaps.
Maybe.
Perhaps indeed.
I really like Red Eye. As we know, I'm a big fan of aeroplane based.
Anything on a plane.
Anything on a plane.
Preferably upper class. For Boy Day.
Yes, draw a veil over that. but yeah, I'm very excited to see Compton back.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I give you my showbiz headline of the week? This is about film. But it just amused me. You know, it's one of my
offshoot,
you know, little franchise that I created that no one cares about apart from me.
Boydie's headline corner.
But my headline corner is, this is from Variety. Jennifer Lawrence did not use an intimacy coordinator with Robert Pattinson because, quotes, he's not pervy.
Yeah, this went absolutely everywhere, this particular story.
Yeah.
The point was, in fact, what I thought was quite interesting was actually what they haven't quoted there, because I guess it's not as headline worthy, is she says something along the lines of, she says, a lot of male actors you work with gets offended when you don't want to fuck them, and then the punishment begins. Mm. And I was like, that's a very, you know, that's very Jennifer Lawrence, and it's very obviously funny her saying it, but it's quite, I would say, revealing about the culture on sets of things, especially among, you know, how female
actors are
treated.
Yeah, don't let the humour of that expression
take exactly.
Away
from it's
the
like, there's a
facts.
Lot under the surface there to unpack. It's like, that's pretty sinister.
Yeah, it's on the
and
surface.
Quite unpleasant.
It's there. It's what she's dealing with.
So. Well, exactly. So I thought that was interesting.
And the next bit of the full headline is, she also refused to let Die My Love, which is the film, edit her cellulite, in quotes, no, that's an ass. There you go.
Good one.
I genuinely love Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah, I think she's wonderful. And she's been doing all the chat shows recently. She was on Jimmy Fallon, I think, recently. She's saying about how annoying she is, and she knows she's annoying. It's like, you're not annoying. You're just, A, very funny, but also just very unfiltered and honest, and it's just great. I don't think she's annoying at all.
I saw her do a Q&A recently for this film, and she was interviewed by someone, Edith Bowman maybe, and her and the director, Lynn Ramsey, were there, and she, not in a diva way, in a funny way, they sat down, she was wearing this kind of dress with like a slit along the side, so kind of, you know, revealing quite a lot of her leg, and she sat and she goes, no, I can't sit here because you can all see the slit, and I've got to change places with it. She had to go up and change places with Lynn Ramsey because she was revealing too much. She's brilliant.
That's very funny. Well, is that, so headline-wise, I must admit, I found it a bit wearisome that pretty much that exact headline was used by so many outlets. Like, it was always just like, okay, but I understand why, because the internet.
Yeah.
But it was just like,
I mean, it's a brilliant headline. I mean, it's not going to be buried anywhere, is it?
Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Time now for this week's reviews, and we begin with All Her Faults, which is on Sky Atlantic. And this is Megan Gallagher's show based on the book of the same name by Andrea Mara, and it stars Sarah Snook as a busy mother who encounters what can only be described as the playdate from hell, because when she comes up to pick up her son, he isn't where she thought he'd be. As mentioned last week, this is basically the exact same setup of the show Playdate, which was, I want to say, earlier this year, but time has no meaning to me, so it might be the year before. I think it was this year. I suspect.
And by the way, it wasn't actually called Playdate.
Was it not called Playdate?
No.
I think
that
it was.
It was originally called
Playdate, and then they changed the title to The Stolen Girl.
Yes.
The Stolen Girl. So it's the same setup as The Stolen Girl, though. Correct. I'm assuming slightly less batshit than that show ultimately turned out to be. maybe.
How many episodes you watched?
Three, to be fair.
Fine.
Yeah. It is incredibly similar. The initial premise that Sarah Snook's character has arranged a play date for her boy with another boy from the same school, and she arrives as you, I'm just repeating what you said. But so that element of it is almost exactly the same as the aforementioned show you mentioned. But then from then on, it is different. It is different because in that case, there was like, it was a complete mystery as to who had taken the kid and why, and there were and they would edit in kind of elements of the side story to explain who the background of exactly what happened, but they still kept it mysterious pretty much all the way through. Whereas in this, it is, as they say in the trade, it's more of a why done it than a who done it.
Oh God!
So you know who has taken the kid and what's happened to the kid essentially quite very early on. I would say kind of, you know, end of first episode into the second episode. But you then meet all the mother's friends and relatives and her husband's family, and kind of they extended their friendship group. The other women, particularly in the neighborhood, it's set in a suburban area of Chicago, a kind of well-to-do area of lavish houses in that place. And so you amass a kind of a gaggle of suspects who would have worked with the one we do know is involved somehow. So somehow there's a connection between the character we know is up to no good, and all these other characters who've all got secrets and lies swirling round in a suburban melange of you know, scandal, basically. It's Sarah Snook is absolutely brilliant, right? She was phenomenal in Succession, and she's really good in this. She again is one of those roles which demands a lot of crying because, you know, she's in a state of distress. But the best thing about it, in a way, it's an intrinsically gripping storyline. It's a mystery, and and it cleverly sets up all kinds of characters, and you do want to know how it all plays out. And I will absolutely finish it as soon as I get time. But almost the most interesting thing about it is they really go there with how would the media and the fellow community react to a mother who's a middle-class, upper-class, privileged woman has, in quotes, and that's why it's called All Her Fault, because everyone assumes it's her fault for not digging deeper into whoever was the nanny who was looking after her kid, or the parents of the kid she's supposed to be having, the boy she's supposed to be having a play date with. So there's a lot of blame going around.
I think they do that really well.
Yeah, that's the most interesting element of it. There's a press conference scene. How many episodes have you seen?
I've only watched one.
There's a press conference scene in episode two where, you know, the police and the parents address the media and they're pleading for help. And that goes spectacularly pear-shaped. And it's almost like comical how terrible it goes within seconds of it beginning. But it does comment on, and there's a lot of stuff about, you know, people looking on it, on Instagram to see, you know, what their social media profile is, and people saying the whole thing could be a scam arranged via social media. And so it is interesting. It does stretch credulity. There's a red herring in episode two. There's like a little thing that happens where you know, oh, that's suspicious. And you think, oh, this is a big secret that is going to come tumbling out. And then they resolve that within about 10 minutes. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, the whole little thing that happens. And there's lots of moments that are preposterous. And, you know, it doesn't really, things that don't make sense. They may make more sense when you watch the whole thing and they explain what the hell's going on. But I am enjoying it. It's got a really good cast. Jake Lacy from season one, I want to say, of The White Lotus. The White Lotus has essentially had a series of privileged white guys, privileged buff white guys who are kind of borderline obnoxious. He was the first one in series one of The White Lotus. He's now doing a very similar routine. He's just got that face. He's got that kind of like, privileged, smug. Kind of like, yeah, like yeah. strapping.
I know exactly what you mean.
American football playing jock. Definitely the jock at university.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now he's like, you know, running a huge business. He's making loads of money, investments of some kind. He's really good. Michael Peña is good as the detective. Dakota Fanning is great as the friend slash possible, you know, like everyone involved is possible.
She's basically the mother who is supposedly the mother who's organised this play date.
Exactly.
That Sarah Snook believes has organised.
Exactly, yes.
You haven't mentioned also the sister of...
Abby Elliott from The Bear.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. And she's playing a really spoiled, annoying brat in it, and she's very good. I would say, I don't feel it's like, it's not in the upper echelons of peak TV. It's pretty compelling, and I do want to know how it plays out. But it's not like, you know, it's not brilliant, I would say. It's fine.
It has a couple of clumsy moments, I would say, as well. There's one bit where a character kind of looks at the boy who's going to be kidnapped. It's like a flashback, has an evil glare. There are ominous chords like playing on the soundtrack. And she says something like, "He's perfect."
Oh my God,
this is embarrassing. Like, but that's the only bum note, I would say, from the episode that I saw. I was like, that was horribly cumbersome.
I think it does a really, like, you know, the lesson of get straight into it. It does that brilliantly.
Right.
Because instantly.
It begins with the quote-unquote pickup from the playdate.
Yeah.
So you are right in it.
She rings the doorbell and this older woman says, I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then from that moment onwards, Sarah Snook is fantastic in this. From that moment onwards, the drama escalates at such a rapid rate because you're following her on this journey of realising that, oh my God, her kid's been taken. She doesn't know who the hell the woman was. Everything has gone wrong in this scenario and she is going to get blamed. She blames herself a little bit, but more importantly, I think what's really interesting about this is the commentary on how, as Boyd said, how everyone in the community sees her, how her own husband, looks at her and it clearly alludes to the fact that, oh, you should have double-checked this. But I think what's really good is this whole exploration of the difference between the roles of the mothers and the fathers. And that is particularly apparent with the character of Jenny, played by Dakota Fanning, who is a mother in that little group and is on a business meeting in the evening. And she's constantly getting calls from the husband just asking, oh, you know, where's such and such water bottle? Where's this? And it's something that is obviously most mothers will probably relate to in some way of, like, you know, the pressures that are put on them as opposed to the husbands who, and one little detail I really loved. Okay, so she gets Shiv, I'm calling her Sarah Snook. Sarah Snook's character. The whole thing is she's received this text from this Jenny character and she's believed it to be true, etc. And then it's pointed out to her, oh, there's a class list of phone numbers and did you tally it with the number that came through? And she's like, oh, no, I didn't. I was so busy, you know, etc. It's a kind of, you can see how it would happen, right? And there's just this one line where she says, because he said, you know, did you check? And she goes, know that list of numbers is on my side of the bed. It's on my bedside table, my side, but I just didn't get around to it because of this. And it's such a good thing because it just outlines the fact that everything is down to her to sort out. And I don't know.
It is an interesting commentary on kind of like emotional labour and the kind of the pressures and the judgment put on working mothers and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like it's.
But also, like, sorry, one more thing is like with Jenny, she's got one kid and she's expected to help at the fundraiser because, oh, there's an expectation that if you've just got one kid, you should be, you know, just kind of helping out for those who have two. And you're like, what? It's outrageous. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. And unlike you, I don't know, I feel like I really wanted to continue to see how it panned out. And I thought it was well done. I'm not saying it's like peak prestige TV, of course, but I think it's like...
It's mid-table.
Mid-table. But you know, there's quite a few moments that you talked about that reaction shot. And there are lots of little, quite cheesy moments like that. And particularly, almost like the soundtrack doesn't help. It's almost like... Dun, dun,
yeah,
dun.
It's very heavy-handed.
Like, it's quite heavy-handed. Like the bit I'm talking about, you sit with a mobile phone as well. I'll say about this red herring moment. It's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. That explains it. And then there's another scene in episode two where the character you're talking about, Dakota Fanning's character, Jenny, is kind of, she's at the school with these other mums and she tells them that she went to see Sarah Snook's character, Marissa, and because everyone's blaming her as well, Dakota Fanning's character. And they literally launch this diatribe, three of them, to her face. And I thought, that's just wouldn't happen. Like,
dignity to do it behind her back.
Well, right, absolutely. And I actually sat there thinking, if I'd have been the TV executive and responsible, I would have put a note saying, surely they can talk about her behind her back like this, but they wouldn't. And it's needed. It's kind of a little bit of storytelling as well. But I just thought that
I
was like...
I think some people would. Like that one, the one that you're probably talking about, one of the three, is the one who said the thing about the fundraiser. And I think she's that kind of person who feels like she is...
Yeah, but it's more that these three women all have something to say to her in a row.
There's always one who's braver, and then the other two are just like...
I thought that... There are just too many moments where it gets a bit ridiculous for it to be top-level, A-grade...
Gourmet
burger.
Yeah, I agree. However, it lands on Sky and now, when, Boydie?
I think it's Friday, the 7th of November.
So last Friday.
Oh, last Friday. Sorry, it's on already. Yeah, this was heavily... This
going
was
machines, heavily embargoed,
yes. Yes.
And it was all their fault?
And it's steady. And it's all... I think the whole thing is available to stream now on Sky Atlantic.
/Brilliant.
Now. Yeah.
All her fault then. Okay, next up, we have Wild Cherry on BBC One. And this is a 6-part series revolving around two mothers and their frankly dreadful teenage daughters who live in a very wealthy community, attend a very exclusive school. There are scandals, there is sexting, there's an illicit social media app, and there's also a call to the head teacher's office, which is nice. Lots going on there. So, Kay, please tell us, of all the people in this show, why is Eve best?
Oh, God, terrible. Eve Best does play one of the mothers, Juliet. Yes. Listen, we're kind of like in the same arena as All Her Fault. You know, these middle-class mothers, very privileged backgrounds. And these two women, they live very pampered lives. They... it's in a rich part of Surrey, right? And there's a whole thing about like the people who live on the island and the people who are across the water and everything like this. Anyway, these two mothers are very different. So Eve Best's character, Juliet, she's a... author, she's a real feminist mother, very defensive of her, frankly, uber bitch daughter, Allegra.
She's dreadful.
Hideous. And is very dismissive of her mother, who she perceives to be an alcoholic. And and it's a very dysfunctional family. The husband is sort of like here and there and everywhere, and Eve Best is doing her best to try and lure him back.
Eve Best is doing her best.
God, awful. Juliet is trying to rekindle the romance, but it's unlikely to happen. And his character is Rafe, and he's played by James Murray. Other mother is Lorna. She's Carmen Ejogo, and she's a businesswoman, and she's less vocal than Juliet. And when the head teacher calls them in, whereas Juliet instantly is like, oh, you know, accusing this man of being a misogynist and like, you know, why are you saying they've made this video and it's not possibly true? If she says it's not true and you're kind of like...
And we bought the science wing. And,
I mean, that kind of vibe. Whereas Lorna is, you know, she's concerned. She's concerned that has this happened? Has her prefect daughter, Grace, like gone down this road? Because she doesn't want that video to be on the online forever. So, I mean, it's commentary about like... kids, you know, this group of kids and their dynamic is quite interesting in terms of the peer pressure, the bullying that goes on. It reminded me a bit of Borders in that way and how the parents deal with it and the commentary on like online videos being made and whatever. Crucially, what I haven't said is it starts in a way, it feels very influenced by Big Little Lies in that we see these group of women, the two mothers, two daughters. I think they've got blood on their hands or they're disheveled. Something, you can tell something big has happened. And so then it's obviously going to flash back and then we see all the, you know, what leads up to that event. It's got a narrator that I could have lived without, frankly, like this. And I don't know how you felt about it. I felt like the narration wasn't necessary and kind of was a bit overblown. It made it more, you know, added a sense of drama that didn't need to be had, if you like. It was just, it felt unnecessary. And overall, like, while I thought it was interesting in terms of what it's saying about this culture that exists in these affluent boarding schools and the parents and stuff, I didn't emotionally connect to the characters per se. So even though I know there's this mystery at the centre of it, I don't know that I need to find out what happened.
Yeah.
It reminded me, it was Big Little Lies. It's also like that one with basically Nicole Kidman. You know, it's like Eve Best is doing the Nicole Kidman role in this. It feels like a British version of that kind of show, where, as you say, something has happened in this community that is scary. In fact, there's kind of more than one thing, because you have got the thing, as you say, the kind of thing that implies some kind of crime or whatever in the beginning, which is left very vague, even through, I mean, I watched two, maybe even three episodes, and it's kind of still vague. And then you've got the accusation that there's a video going around, a naughty video, and they deny that there is, but the headmaster of the poncy posh public school says there is, and that, so there's a whole kind of slight mystery about that,
and a catalogue.
There's a lot. There's mystery piled upon mystery, because there's this rapper character called K Riz. Who I have to say...
Not K-Ribs.
No.
K-Riz.
Who runs this kind of like mansion house thing for influencers to
some
film...
Some sex party.
And it's kind of... And yet it's not as much of a sex party as you think it might be. Initially I was like, oh, what's happening here? But then it's just kind of them kind of in stripping to their bras and then, doing bad rap.
And then a whole thing kicks off.
Yeah.
Which is mystifying.
Indeed. And then someone goes missing, right? And there's another mystery. Well, you think the person going missing is probably tied to the initial mystery. Anyway... There's a lot going on. Mm. But you mentioned about it, the whole thing is created by Nicole Leckie, who's in it as well.
Yeah.
Nicole Leckie, who did Mood, which was good.
Yeah, very good.
Original in 2022. And she's written that. And she my favorite thing about this is her role. So she plays this kind of American wellness influencer and writer, in fact, who is like a guru, and guru who's also like a shrink. And so, like, one of the girls is seeing her for therapy, if you like, but she also has this grand opening in her massive house that she's got.
In fact, is she the narrator then?
Yeah, she's the narrator as well. So that's why she's narrating. Yeah, absolutely. And that character I really like, as you know, I do have issues with wellness gurus.
Yeah.
And that she kind of like, there's a kind of satirical element to that whole story. There's one, and the wealth that they film it in, you know, I don't know where they found these places, but the actual, I think they did film them in actual huge big houses that you find in Surrey, wherever it's set in a fictional bit of Surrey, isn't it? Like a gated community kind of thing. But the houses are spectacular, mm-hmm. you have to say. And the one that Nicole Leckie's character's in has this thing, I think you see it in episode 2, where she's suddenly standing there in her like front room and suddenly the floor sinks.
What?
And it becomes a swimming pool.
No.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch
it's
episode
insane,
2 now.
Which apparently is a real thing. It's a real thing that is in this house. Yeah, I was really interviewed with her. She's saying, yeah, it's incredible. They found this house.
Oh, wow.
So they used it and they did the scene where suddenly she's in the middle of a swimming pool in her front room, basically. So there's also kind of, I enjoyed the whole kind of...
The grandeur.
Yeah, the grandeur of it and the fact that it is a British version of that kind of thing. I think it's a little bit messy. It's a little bit, because there's so much going on.
Yeah.
It's almost like too much. I want to know, okay, well, what is your central mystery here? Mm-hmm. And in a way, she's kind of saying, everyone's got something to hide. I mean, a bit similar actually to All Her Fault. It is another show about rich, privileged people in which everyone's got things in their closet. I mean, people
not just covering glorious, up. Glamorous clothes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, people are literally covering up and not talking about stuff, dark stuff that's happened in their past, which is a very common trope, shall we say, in this kind of show. But I enjoy it. I think it gets better as it goes along. So I watched kind of up to episode 3, and the messiness kind of is ironed out more. But I think it's a bit, if I'd have been, again, I'm just imagining myself as a TV executive in this episode, I would have been like, can we just focus more on one thing?
Tighten it.
In that first episode, because it's a bit all over the place. But I do think it's well worth watching. I enjoyed it.
What about you, James?
Initially, I thought, oh, this is English Gossip Girl. Like when it begins,
yeah.
And they're talking about this app. Yeah, what's the app called? This sort of app that they've got.
It's
this
like thing. The catalogue.
The catalogue, yeah, which seems to be some kind that they've somehow created this.
It's like Facebook. Do you remember Facebook started out as judging who's good looking or not?
Yeah.
It's that.
Yeah. Okay. And if they've created
that TV show, Your Face or Mine?
Yeah, and that as well. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well,
but it's in The Social Network. If you watch the film The Social Network, it's very similar.
Yeah, exactly that. So that whole thing, and as you're right there, I got to the end of the first episode and I was genuinely struggling to say what the show was about because there were so many different strands that seemed to go in completely separate directions. And I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing in the world in the first episode if it's, you know, compelling, but I guess I wasn't really seized by any of them, partly because I didn't particularly gravitate towards any of the characters. And like the girls, especially Allegra, is irritating.
The teenage girls are a fucking nightmare.
But, well, they're deliberately awful.
They are deliberately awful. And there are levels of awfulness, as you say. The one of them is much, much worse than the others. Yeah. But yeah, it's she's so awful, it's quite painful.
I remember there was a bit where a girl in a panda mask is like stripped to her bra and gyrating in front of her like a camera.
Oh, yeah.
And I literally said out loud, what is going on?
Yeah.
What is happening?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what is
this
going
is
on.
Life
at this
life these
point.
Days, James. Now, you are a committed influencer, as we know, on TikTok.
Well,
so
clearly, yeah.
Maybe there's some inspiration.
My panda mask is at home, sadly. I didn't bring
I don't want to know about where it is.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's not terrible. I don't really feel like I'm sufficiently invested to continue watching it.
Yeah, I feel the same.
Though, so.
Which is, this is my kind of territory, but yeah.
Yeah.
Interestingly, it's got a really big, like, Saturday night BBC One slot, 9 o'clock, which is, like, a big prime time push for it. So it's quite a bold decision, because the most previous thing was The Nine Bodies in the Mexican Morgue. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Mexican Morgue, yeah.
Which is, like, quite a big plane crash whodunit thing that did well, I think, recently. So it's, you know, it's a good slot. I hope it does well.
Finally this week, we have Pluribus on Apple TV. You know, I miss the plus. Like, every time I say Apple TV, I want to say
it feels
the plus.
Like you forgot to say something.
I'll tell you another thing about that, is that they do, some press releases, they still use the plus sometimes.
This is mystifying. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. They've got a new ident with all sorts of colours on it as well.
Guys, you say this, but actually I forgot to say, we had a message in the postback from someone who said, now, recently I think I've heard James doing some adverts for Pilot. I was like, okay. And then he said, yes, and I thought he dropped podcast from the title, but apparently you're saying on the adverts Pilot TV podcast. After declaring you were dropping it.
Oh, yeah, but so the reason for that is, we've completely gone off track now, is because if I'm advertising something and it's just on the radio, I probably need to say it's a podcast, because no one's going to know what it is. If you're literally listening to the podcast, you don't need me to tell you that it's a podcast. Okay. Like, you know it's a podcast. You're listening to it. It's a podcast.
Fine.
But if I'm doing an advert, I feel the need to say, yes, it is a podcast. That is what I'm advertising.
Fine. That's okay. Yeah. I thought we were being inconsistent. Which is unlike us.
It's tailored to the medium.
Got it. On behalf of the listener, got it.
Finally this week, we're going to talk about Pluribus, which is created by Breaking Bad's Vince Gilligan, and once again takes their showrunner back to Albuquerque in New Mexico, but not crucially, to chart the rise and fall of a meth lord, but rather a romanticy author called Carol Serca. And she's played by Rae Seehorn from Better Call Saul. And she, in this, is one of the only people immune to a virus that quite literally brings the rest of the world together in complete harmony. And as the tagline for this show goes, the most miserable person on earth must save the world from happiness, which is really kind of cool little log line. Yeah. Boydie, this all sounds a little bit like the Borg from Star Trek, if I'm honest with you. But tell us, was resistance futile?
Yes. This is, at least initially, it's like Contact meets The Leftovers meets Severance. It's got a brilliant, I think the premise is so clever, though, the high concept premise. There was kind of Apple, initially they were trying to keep it a secret, weren't they? Like, they won't even tell anything.
Yeah, they were very vague about
very
it, but now I think they've been very upfront about what
so
it's
So I think
about.
We can discuss the fact that the genius of it is that it kind of, it works as a, even though you kind of don't really know, the contact bit is kind of explaining something's going on somewhere in the universe that means that humanity suddenly comes together via a virus as like one entity, right?
Yeah, like a collective,
like the Borg. But that doesn't mean much to, it certainly doesn't mean anything to Kay, it doesn't mean slightly more to me, but it's a Star Trek reference. I mean, who needs that?
Got it.
Right? So humanity kind of becomes this collective entity, except for 12 people in
13.
The round world of 13. Right? Well, initially she thinks it's 11, then she thinks it's 12. Then
yeah, the number changes.
literally a handful of people, if you like, two handfuls of people around the world have not been, for some reason, embroiled in this new one singular entity version of humanity, where everyone on the planet can speak to everyone else and knows what everyone's doing all at the same time.
Everyone on the planet has a shared consciousness.
Yeah.
So it's like we are all one person. Yeah.
Can you imagine if we were all one person?
Yeah. Good God, no.
Now, this is the big thing. It's like, would you rebel? If you thought that, you know, because essentially that consciousness is having a great time.
Yeah.
Mostly, right?
Genuinely very happy.
Like, no inhibitions. Mm-hmm. Having a fun, you know, it's all...
Carefree.
They're eating great food.
I'm down for it.
Yeah, it's all
Hook
great.
Hook me up, inject me now.
Everyone's working together to achieve common goals.
Yeah.
Now, what's fascinating about this is, like, and I've used the Borg analogy. The Borg analogy in Star Trek were an alien race of kind of cybernetic organisms. The point was, they would assimilate life forms into their collective, and they were the same. They were a single hive mind. There was a queen later on, but that's a whole other thing. That was retconned. But it was basically an analogy for communism back in the time, because it came out, it was in the 80s, it was a whole thing, and it was all about, oh, look at this, this is what communism is. It's this hive mind, and we're all about our individuality. Yeah. And I thought that was quite an interesting thing, whereas this is a different spin on that.
Well, but what I was going to say was, it still has it still works as an analogy, and it still works as a metaphor for political issues.
It does.
Like. And that, and it's and because the whole question is, would you as an individual just go for the quiet, happy life and be fine with that? Or would you rebel against it, as Ray Seahorn's character does brilliantly, and is essentially the whole point of the series? She rebels in kind of intrinsically, it feels wrong to her to have her individuality and to have all of our individualities removed so that we can all be part of this mass Borg slash entity, as I'm calling it. And it's fascinating how it plays out because, you know, when she meets the other people in episode two, for example, I'm trying not to spoil anything, I'm sure, like the other, is that a spoiler? That
she, well, I will say, if we were exposed to this virus, then you'd be spoiling the show for everyone instantly because we would all be privy to your thoughts.
That's true. So, there's a scene in episode two where, you know, she's confronted with the fact that this is her thing, this is her reaction to it, visceral reaction to it, which is also influenced by something that happens very early on in episode one, by the way, which is a traumatic thing. And so she is in a state of mind, and but it's not necessarily the state of mind of people in a similar situation to her. And that makes the whole thing so intriguing. How it's gonna, and just the way it's done and the genius of Vince Gilligan, for me, is, and he did this throughout Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. You know, he's made two of the greatest TV dramas ever made, let's face it, those two shows. But what at its height, both of those shows, he shows you what's going on, if you like, from kind of from the very subjective perspective of a character, particularly Ray Seahorn's character in this case. And it's kind of like there's something incredibly clever and smart about just the way he places the camera sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, and she's looking at something astonishing going on throughout, particularly the first episode, which is like a relentless, almost real-time experience of what would it be like for you if you were to experience this thing where suddenly everyone, first of all, everyone's almost drops dead, seemingly. They're not dead. Some of them are. And then they kind of wake up and they're part of this whole thing. And her almost first-hand subjective experience of that is filmed in such a clever way that it totally immerses you in this, what would happen if you were confronted by this insane development in the universe and for humanity. And it's just brilliantly, brilliantly done. On a filmmaking level, I think it feels like he's flexing his muscles and making something so cinematic and bold, to use the B word, and convincing, even though it's such a far-fetched, mad idea, but he makes it seem real because of the relentless brilliance of his filmmaking.
He's very, very good. And it has that Breaking Bad pacing to it, you know, where it's almost mindful. Like, it has a weird, almost meditative feel. Like, it just lets you marinate in this situation and just, like, absorb it through osmosis.
He will show you something, you don't really know what's going on, and he will show you extensively.
Yep.
But because of the editing and the thing that he is showing you, even though you don't know what the fuck is happening, and it's quite slowly burning in a way, but it's still incredibly compelling because you want to know what the fuck this thing is that you're watching. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, anyway, carry on.
It's one of the things, it is not a plotty show. I think that's fair to say. Like, it is, it's vibes. A lot of this is like, it's a mood piece, but it's a really interesting character study. And one thing we should say is Ray Seahorn is absolutely incredible in this, because it is, for all intents and purposes, it's not entirely, but it is largely a one-hander. It is basically her, a lot of the time, on her own, doing things. There are literal episodes, I've seen 7 of the 8, of course I have, where it's just her, just doing stuff, silently a lot of the time. And it's just, it's so compelling. And there are episodes of Breaking Bad like that, where it's just very quiet, and you're just watching things, and it's like, but it's so brilliantly put together, and it explores themes like loneliness and individuality and togetherness and selfishness and selflessness. And as you say, there are kind of political undertones to it all, and, you know, what does socialism look like when everyone is essentially the same person? And there's also, you know, she's looking at, like, what is happiness? What is happiness for her versus what is happiness for them? And part of this that we kind of haven't really addressed is that the whole of the world is this sort of hive mind, but they're also really benevolent. Like, they want nothing but good things for her and will pretty much do anything she asks because they just want to make her happy. And that's such a wild setup. Like, and she's so misanthropic. Right, but she's really grumpy and miserable and just, like, angry at the world anyway. And she finds them all deeply irritating.
But also that anger has huge ramifications.
Right, it does have huge ramifications. And also the cause of that anger comes from somewhere as well. She's not, I mean, to be fair, she is quite crabby, full stop, but she has good reason to be in a bad mood when the show kind of probably kicks off. But it's fascinating looking at her kind of wrestling with her own personality and her own psyche and what the future looks like for her. Like, when it's the weirdest kind of, I almost hesitate to call it post-apocalyptic, but it has elements of that to it.
Yeah.
But it's a unique vision of the apocalypse. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Mm. What I love
it's
about
magnificent.
It, I mentioned the political thing. I was going to expand on that a little bit because you don't know what its politics are, if you like. It could be, you could have this could be a political analogy for all kinds of different politics. So, for example, I was reminded of, and this is, I'm sure this was filmed ages ago, so it's not conscious at all, but there's a scene where everyone sat round a table and they're all debating something. And I was reminded of Donald Trump when he gathered all of these, like, giants. He had the Apple boss. He had thingy from Facebook. What's his name? And he had all of these. Genius, tech geniuses, and they're all enthralled. They've all decided, and in fact, you could include Keir Starmer in this, they've all decided that the easiest thing to do is keep him happy. Keep Donald Trump happy. Keep complimenting him. Keep boosting his ego. Then he'll be okay. And it's like, they become this like one entity where they're all enthralled to this one man, I'm trying not to be too political. This one.
You're not doing a great job, but carry on.
This one. Let's know when the trying starts.
Yeah. This one, let's face it, crazy man. But in Pluribus, I feel like she's in that. She's watching all these people just deciding for an easier life, just go along with the whole thing. And it's brilliantly provocative and intriguing to see her rebelling against it and what happens subsequently and the decisions she has to face. Minute by minute, hour by hour, day, but there's literally a clock countdown initially, then count, and that's really interesting because I think it's just showing you that her life is just now a constant series of decisions, sometimes micro, sometimes macro, that are going to affect the world in an incredibly powerful way.
Yeah,
we could bang on about this,
and we will, of course, because on next week's show, we are, with any luck, going to have Vince Gilligan, Ray Sehorn, and Carolina Wydra in this studio to talk about the show.
Incredible,
which can be very exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will all be one hive mind together discussing the show. It's going to be very exciting. Yeah, this is really, really good. It is not Breaking Bad. It's a very different thing.
I didn't get screeners in time, but I want to watch this.
Yeah, it's wild. It's, I've never seen anything like
it. No, it's fascinating.
It's,
yeah.
It's but he worked, a complete original.
He worked on The X-Files. That was the thing he was most famous for back in before Breaking Bad and So it has got that,
I feel like it's got a lot of that DNA.
It's not,
it, yeah.
By the way, because you could, it's science fiction. In a way, fundamentally, but not in an annoying way.
Yeah. So when I didn't get screeners, I wasn't sad about it. But now that I've heard you talk about it, I'm like, okay, I need to see this.
Yeah. It's really good. It is really good. Okay. When is that on, Boydie?
It started. Yeah, it started, didn't it, on Friday?
Yes, on Apple TV Non Plus.
Exactly.
Good one.
Pluribus non plus.
Pluribus non plus. What else is out this week? Loads of stuff that we couldn't do because tons of stuff was embargoed this week.
The aforementioned Malice with Jack Whitehall. That starts on Friday on Prime Video.
Yeah, Death by Lightning, as we mentioned, was already on. That was on Netflix. That started on the 6th.
Trespasses started on Sunday, just started. Gillian Anderson and Tom Cullen, your dude that you mentioned, of course.
Yeah. Maxton Hall started on Prime also last week.
Yeah. Palm Royale. Season 2 on Apple TV.
Yeah.
Wednesday that arrived. Remember that? Ricky Martin, Kristen Wiig, kind of,
It's very star-studded.
Very star-studded. The Play for Today started on, Channel 5, all hell Channel 5 for commissioning one-off
It's a revival.
Yeah. Revival of the BBC Play for Today. And the first one goes out on Thursday at 9 o'clock. And it stars...
Anita Dobson.
Thank you. And Tracy Ann Oberman and others, Nina Wadia and others. You've seen it, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, Nigel Havers.
There you go. Yeah. Good?
Yeah. Enjoyable. Excellent. Sweet. It's like,
The Beast in Me, did you mention that just now?
I didn't, but you mentioned it earlier on, yes.
Yeah, that's the Claire Danes thing. Matthew Rhys, I didn't mention, isn't it? Who's fantastic.
Yeah, that's on Netflix, and that starts on the 13th, which is Thursday.
Can't say that it's fantastic because it's heavily embargoed.
Do you know what? That's a full circle moment, because the Richard Burton show I was talking about?
Yeah. Yes.
Matthew Rhys actually reads out parts of Burton's diaries.
There you go.
A thing called Allegiance starts on You and Alibi on Thursday at 9 o'clock.
Call the channel by its proper name, Boyd.
You and Alibi.
Yes. Yeah.
That is a police procedural, so, I mean, we've already dismissed that.
Yeah. Landman returns for its second season, yes, on Paramount Plus. That's on Sunday. And also Summer Water, starring Dougray Scott, lands on Channel 4, also on Sunday.
Correct.
One of these things, or more, who knows, something we will tackle on Pilot Plus,
yeah,
because there's a lot going
there's
on.
There's a lot, yeah.
But the crucial question, of course, is, what is our pick of the week?
Oh, Pluribus.
Yes, it
I
is
imagine
Pluribus.
It would have been for me if I'd watched it, so I'm just going to say All Her Fault, because that's
yeah,
what
fair,
I've seen.
Because that's what you've seen, yeah. But yeah, Pluribus is magnificent. Okay, fabulous. That is it for this week's show. Thank you very, very much for listening. Please do leave us a 5-star rating on every single platform known to humanity. So literally everything. I want you to go on to TripAdvisor, leave us a 5-star rating, anything you want.
Or just think it in your mind, because our hive mind will get it.
Yeah, that's it. Just think 5 stars and it will happen. But actually, make an effort and do it anyway. Please follow us on social media at Pilot TV Pod, and if you so choose, at Boyd Hilton, at Carrie Barrett, at James C. Dyer. We will be back in your ears, as is our proclivity, on on
as
Thursday.
Is our threat.
On Thursday for Pilot Plus.
Trying not to say the word won't.
One of these won't. With one of these particular shows. But also next week, what's happening next week? Well, we've already mentioned we've got some very special guests in the studio next week, so that will be very exciting. But we will probably do, I don't know, Summer Water. Malice.
Definitely some water.
Stuff, possibly.
Because you've seen it.
Yeah.
Selfish. There's a bunch of other stuff coming out as well.
So that's comprehensive.
Yeah. Death of Bunny Monroe is next week.
Yes.
Daddy Issues is next week. Man on the Inside returns to Netflix next week.
Yes.
Mighty Nine, which is, you won't want to watch that.
Yeah, what is that?
It's a critical role animation show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I saw that and I thought, I haven't heard of that. There's
no,
a reason for that.
No, there is a reason.
Just explained all.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. But we'll do some of those. So this is
absolutely
very exciting. Yeah.
Sick.
Resistance is futile. You will all become one with the pod.
Indeed.
Pilot out.